the 6th day of March, a few days away until we get into the negotiation window in NFL free agency. March 15th is actually when we start the new league year, and away we go. Did you take in much of the combine? I tried for the show purposes to see if I could glean anything from that, but I agree with Dan Campbell, the Lions coach. He's like, dude, we evaluate you off of your film, and I look forward to the combine so I can interview players, but I'm not going to put much stock, if anything, into dudes running around in their underwear. I mean, Angel, I'm watching one of the drills. It's an offensive line drill, and they started on their backs. And the guy conducting the drill blows the whistle. They get up, and they get up, and they do their, you know, sidestep here, sidestep there. But they started on their backs. How many offensive linemen start the play on their backs? I know, Q Broncos offensive line joke, but they don't start the play on their backs.
No, it's certainly strange that the combine, as an activity, it's meant to be this private workout thing for the owners and the coaches and all that, but we have to broadcast it all over the place. What this man did running 40 yards. Yeah. He did it so fast. The next guy did it even faster.
I mean, you already know they're fast.
And like,
are you just hoping that they didn't slow down at all between your playing last year and the combine?
They're about two months removed from any actual real in the season workout. So training, weight training, lifting, conditioning, all that stuff. But then you take some off time and then you spend a couple of weeks training for these drills and these exercises. It's like, okay, well, I can measure your work ethic with your ability to do a shuttle drill or to go catch a couple passes turning left and right every 3 seconds. That's fine, but what can you do actually on the field?
Yeah, I try not to be that guy that's like, oh, we don't need all this other stuff. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that really find it.
It's good for like base measurements,
I guess. But this article from Jeff Legwald, he covers the Broncos for ESPN. He's talking about maybe this could be this. There could be a chance that this thing ends, that the combine has outlived its usefulness. He quoted DeMaurice Smith, who is the NFL Players Association Executive Director. He talked about it during the Super Bowl week. He took aim at it. Obviously, there's more than 300 draft prospects going through workouts, medical testing, and interviews with coaches and front office executives. Smith went on to say, it's for the teams to be able to engage in intrusive employment actions that don't exist anywhere else. Do you think... Now, we know Troy Vincent, a while ago, he compared the combine to a slave auction. Yikes. Is it too intrusive? I mean, here we go, though. And, you know, Hooligans, I give you guys crap for this. I don't like to compare the real world to sports. You know, though, if that were you or me, that'd be what... It's not. It's a game. Life is way different. You know, Luka and Booker were going at it last night in the game. If you and Micah got mad about some kind of production detail there, and then you got in each other's face, and it was like about ready to get heated, and I know you got that smirk. You want some smoke there. If it gets too bad, one of you guys is gone. You know, Joker slaps a guy like that. It's sports. You can't compare it. So DeMaurice Smith saying that, you know, it's intrusive. It's an intrusive employment action. Is it too intrusive? I mean, they are in their underwear. If you want to go with that, it's weird. I don't enjoy seeing... I mean, the whole thing is just guys in tights. Everything's sticking out there, hanging out, and it's just running around. It's weird. That's weird to me.
And, I mean, how many O-line, D-linemen are running 40 yards at any point in the game?
Like, not very... Like, never. Like, hardly ever.
40 yards full speed.
Right.
With pads and stuff on.
And then why don't they wear pads? At least make them wear shoulder pads. That's what they're going to be in.
I mean, every lineman looks bigger with shoulder pads.
They're going to be in their helmets and their shoulder pads when they play. So the idea that we're judging them based off of how well they land, they're on their back and get up and move to the left, move to the right, it's all different. Smith said, as soon as you show up, you have to waive all of your medical rights. And you not only have to sit there and endure embarrassing questions, and I think that's horrible, and I don't want to poo-poo any of that, but... Would you want your son to spend hours inside of an MRI machine and then be evaluated by 32 separate team doctors who are, by the way, are only doing it for one reason? What's the reason? To decrease your draft value. This kind of goes to Sean McVay's whole thing about the draft. It's a crapshoot. Does this make it less of a crapshoot? It might make it more of a crapshoot.
Well, the more information you get about a player, the better you're going to be able to make a decision on that player.
Yeah.
But it's the draft, and ultimately it comes down to you as a coach and your coaching staff is, you know, I could take a seventh-round pick and make him one of the greatest of all time, or I could make a first-round pick who I think already has all the talents. I just have to put him on the field in our uniform, and it's going to work out, and they bust out in a year.
And I guess it gives teams a central location to where they can do all their due diligence there. But don't you think before the combine that all these GMs and coaches already have their draft board? I mean, they got to, right? That's their job. They've already kind of got an idea. So then the combine comes, and they either add to that or they take some guys away. But theoretically, couldn't you do all the same work without the combine? I mean, if we're not going to put much stock, which I don't think you and I are, putting much stock into the workouts and the 40 and all that stuff, then, you know, obviously you want to talk to them, which you can do interviews. But if he's on your list, aren't you calling? You're calling his coaching staff. You're calling people that are familiar with him, and you're doing that anyway. So do you need all the extra hoopla surrounding these guys and these teams with the NFL combine?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them will have their own pro days at their schools, and that's more of, hey, we need to make sure we go look at this guy, or hey, this guy might be on our list, but we're not sure. Let's go look at him. But, you know, that's why you have a scout team, so you can send them to five different schools in a weekend to make sure you look at those specific prospects. The combine feels more if you're unsure about it. Like, if you're in the first 15 picks and you don't know who you think you're going to be able to pick, then you're just talking to players just to talk to them.
Yeah, Legwald quoted a random executive in this about Smith's comments, and the random executive didn't give a name. Smith's comments are the most extreme read on the combine, which is true. These are all the most extreme reads. The executive said, is it perfect? No. Does it, like everything, need some discussion at times? Changes made? Sure. But it's difficult for me to see a future without some kind of evaluation tool where we can gather the amount of information we can gather here. We don't watch people run the 40-yard dash, and that's it. It's true. You are. But are you getting their best interview? Because they're doing so many of these. They're interviewing. You're going to interview me for a few hours, then I got to go do another interview for a few hours. At some point, do you get tired of those interviews, which could be mentally exhausting, and you just start short answering that bad boy?
Yeah, you get tired of telling your childhood story 10, 15 times, you know, talking about your upbringing, all that, talking about, you know, what coach in middle school inspired you to do this or whatever, and you say that to 10 different people, and it feels like, oh my God, I feel like I've already said this. Then you get in your own head thinking, oh, I need to shorten it up, or I need to elaborate a little bit more because maybe I told this guy this part and I didn't tell him this part.
True.
And it's a lot. And these are kids. These are, you know, grown men, young adults, but they're still pretty
they're
much
trying
kids.
To make a lifetime adjustment or transitioning from the college world to this. That's already a daunting
and
task.
And their focus isn't, you know, not saying in the bad way, but it's not, oh, what is your career going to look like? What is your finances going to look like? It's, I'm just trying to get there at this point. I'm just trying to make it so I look like a good prospect for you to add to your team. That's all. Like, yeah. Right now, all they want is just to play football at the pro level.
Yeah, like what could you do to change this where it's not so, you know, if you could meet in the middle? Because DeMaurice Smith hates it. The players maybe think that it's a bit intrusive. The executives are like, yeah, but how are we going to? Because it is real evaluation that we're able to do that's right in front of us. Like you said, guys on the fence. This gives guys on the fence a better opportunity if you come in with a great interview and it rolls, it works there. But nobody else really has this. How do you make it? How do you get this thing to meet in the middle? You know, there's been a lot of proposals for the format overall, modifying on-field workouts to help them do a better job evaluating specifically the quarterback position, more multiple player drills, even some offense versus defense. You don't want them to get hurt, though, in these things. So you don't
They're getting hurt anyway.
Yeah, I guess, but if you pad them up and I got a DB going up against a receiver and we're going hard, it's not tackle, but we're still going hard, mess up an ankle in these things? I don't know. I guess then you're prone to injury. And you're not getting drafted there. I don't know that you want to get too crazy on the drills as far as increasing what they're actually asked to do. Too many cuts and all that stuff. I know they're doing all this stuff in the game and they could get hurt there, but isn't that a sucky thing if you were supposed to be a third or fourth round guy and then you mess up your ankle or something in one of these drills and you don't even get drafted?
I mean, I'd rather evaluate you mid-season, a couple of weeks into actual practices and game preparation. Where are you at? Who are you in that moment? Not, I've had a couple weeks to rest and get ready for the combine. I'm ready to answer all of your questions the best I can.
Yeah.
How are you when your team is 1-3 to start the year? You're not having a great start, but you're still prepping, still working out throughout the week. What does that look like for that player?
Yeah. Again, there's so many ways to evaluate these guys, and the guys get paid to do this. There's guys on staff that are paid to do those personal evaluations well before the combine. Get this, though. The combine is sacred to these teams. Of the 262 players selected in last year's draft, only 32 of them were non-combine prospects. Guys like who we just talked to earlier with Zach Angelillo, former UNC fullback. So just 32 of those guys last year. 32 guys didn't go to the combine, but were drafted. So that means 12%, just 12%. Evaluator said players are more apt to be moved on a draft board based on information arising from the combine, a face-to-face interview, or a medical exam than anything that happens during the on-field workout. So do you need the on-field workouts then? What if you cut it? Take that out. You just do the medical exam, you do the interview. I don't know. I don't watch. It's kind of like preseason. It's like All-Star Weekend. It's all these things that I guess they deem necessary, but they're not really that great for us going forward. But I'm just curious because this is picking up some smoke now as far as whether or not the combine is something we're going to continue to have in our future in the NFL as far as evaluating talent. I've always thought it was interesting. Now, I when I was younger, I loved watching the 40-yard dash and doing all these different the cone drills, and those were fun, the bench press, all that. It was fun. But, you know, over time, you just kind of, it's not as interesting because you know that stuff doesn't matter. Everybody's fast in the NFL. There's only a few guys like Tyreek Hill that separate themselves with that crazy speed. But everybody's pretty damn fast at this level. So when you see guys bench pressing and running fast and doing these drills, okay, that's great. But what's that look like when they're in the game? A lot of guys are game fast. They just get in the game and a new, Daniel Jones does not look like, I don't know what his 40 time was. Maybe it was pretty good. I don't know. But when he's in the game, he looks a hell of a lot faster than he did his rookie season. I don't know what that is, but there are guys just with different game speeds. How they move when they're playing a game. How they move opposed to other players who are also in their shoulder pads and everything. So I've always kind of, I don't know, rolled my eyes a little bit at all the combine, like the deep, oh, well, here's what he did at the combine. I need to know what you did in the Senior Bowls and the bowl games and the regular season games and what was your practice regiment like? Like you said, what are you doing to prepare each and every week for this? This combine is something completely unique and different that you're never going to do again. So I want to know when you're in your weekly regiment preparing for games, how good of a practice player were you? How good of a game time prepper were you? How good of a teammate were you? How coachable were you? Those are all questions I get that you sort out through these interviews, but there are some really interesting interviews. Who was the player years ago that was asked if how comfortable he would be if he had was that a Super Bowl question or a combine question? Because those things all kind of run together. But how comfortable he would be if he had a gay teammate? I think that was a combine question.
I think it was.
Like, That's
they asked some crazy
stuff. That's what
D.
Maurice Smith's talking about. Like, that's different. And like I said, I don't like to compare the real world to sports because they're two totally different professions. But there are just questions you can't be asking, man. Like, there's just a lot of those that are asked, and I think players, the further we go in life and progress, players are getting uncomfortable with this stuff. It's like, why would you ask me that?
Maybe they don't always think twice about it because I'm interviewing for an NFL job. This is not, oh, I'm going down to the retail firm and I'm trying to get a job as an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't want to say selling yourself, but presenting yourself as I'm the best football player that you can draft and you need to pick me.
Well, I'm using a pick to get you. So I'm trying to value these picks are sacred to some teams and we're learning more and more. They're not as sacred to others.
And but, if you're talking to a coach, it's maybe a different conversation than you're talking with a GM or a front office person.
Right. Yeah. I it's just one of those things that if everybody's okay with it, and apparently they're not, but if you can make it work, then do it. Sure, it's no skin off my back. More evaluation, I guess, but you know, you just wonder. Some guys can say and do all the right things, and then they're in the combine, and of course they're going to say all the right things in the interview. It's kind of like an opening press conference for a coach. It's hard to lose those things. It's hard to lose these interviews when you know everybody's cool. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to have some intense conversations with players like we learned last week that are getting into some trouble and stuff. Those become probably very necessary. But I'm just curious. Will the NFL Combine, what does the future look like? Is it murky? It seems like at the very least it's murky right now. 22 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, let's talk a little Denver Nuggets, Toronto Raptors back at it tonight. And I thought it was so funny, Richard Jefferson on the broadcast, if you watch the national broadcast, he's bragging about how good Giannis is and Joel is and why they were guys he's favoring. Joker goes in with like some crazy little Sombor shuffle and bam, pops a quick two. And I was like, dude, that pretty much tells the story. Joker's performing while these guys are talking about other guys that should be the MVP. It's over now. He's going to get the third MVP and now got to go win a title. That's what it's all about. Beating teams like Toronto tonight. You should win this game. You got to find ways to do it. I think, Angel, their record for wins in a regular season was 57. So that's a new thing I'm eyeballing for the Nuggets. Can you get the overall record in wins? They would be, what are they, 12 games out. They got to win 12 more games to tie it, 13 to break it. We'll talk more about that on the other side. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Sean Payton, Russell Wilson. Will it work out? Here are our thoughts on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hi, I'm Kevin Lytle of the Fort Collins, Colorado, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
That's pretty cool, Angel, when you look at it. For the Nuggets, their best season ever was 57 wins. That was George Karl's Coach of the Year. That was Masai Ujiri's Executive of the Year. And that was also both of their final years with the Nuggets. Masai went on to be with the Toronto Raptors, and George Karl was fired. But that was the best year. 57-25 was their record. They had only lost, I think, a few games at home or something. It was like three games at home. That was the Gallo years. That was Danilo Gallinari, not Carmelo Anthony. Now you look at it, they are 45-19. They have 18 games remaining. Is that right? And we got a couple of magic numbers here. How many wins do they need, Anja? You had all the research. How many wins just to clinch the sixth seed at the very least? Not a play-in, but a sixth seed.
Five wins.
Five more dubs. That's done. Guaranteed they're going to find five more wins. And how many do they need to clinch the number one seed overall in the Western Conference?
Overall, one seed, 12 wins.
12 wins, and that would also get them the tie. That would tie their record for best. That would tie the best record of all time for the Nuggets. Now, in the ABA, they won like 68 or something like that, but that's not what we're talking about. It's the NBA. So 12 is a magic number. 13, of course, would break that record. Do you see 13 on the list here? Tonight's got to be one of those, right? Home against Toronto. I would imagine, unless, you know, just Toronto's a middle-of-the-road team, like a 500 team. They're battling to, you know, they're in the play-in spot right now. They're trying to get in. And then I think they have Chicago shortly after that on Wednesday. So that should be two dubs right there. We're talking two dubs coming up. Then you're at San Antonio and then home against Brooklyn. Four dubs? We're going to go four in a row here?
Yeah, so they have, see, 18 games left.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely seeing 12 wins on this remaining schedule.
I am too.
And they might not get 12 because that changes depending
right.
on what happens.
Memphis
with
loses
else.
And everybody, they may not need that. But that's like assuming everybody wins every game.
Having a tiebreaker over Memphis also helps.
That's a huge deal.
Because that makes that gap even further for them.
Let's look at the stretch of games here, the important games. Well, not necessarily important. They're all, you know, it's all about positioning right now. Home against Toronto and home against Chicago. See, like, I think those two games are so important. They're winnable games and they're at home. You got to be able to, just like the way they beat Houston on Tuesday last week, the games in front of you that you're supposed to win, I think the Nuggets are a 6.5-point favorite against the Raptors tonight. These are games you got to win. And Toronto's a decent team trying to just stay in the play-in game. Chicago's on the outside looking in. Then you're at San Antonio on Friday, home against Brooklyn on Sunday, at Toronto again next to start next week off. The Pistons are in that mix. The Knicks, who are an okay team. Dude, Angel, there's a chance you can lock this thing down in the next couple of weeks. Don't, if you know, you might have some of your load management games, maybe slight injuries, whatever. But, dude, the next six or seven games, half of what you just told me they needed to clinch is right there in front of them to win, you know, seven games. And then we're talking, man, you're going to fall over it. So the next 2 weeks, dude, they could put a major dent in that and just lock up that one seed.
Yeah, so you have a couple home games. You'll take a five-game road trip to play all Eastern teams, home against Milwaukee, home against Philly, home against New Orleans. And then you get into a really tough stretch mm-hmm. at the end of March at Phoenix, home against Golden State, at Houston, at Phoenix again, at Utah, and home against Sacramento.
Let's see. So let's look at it this way. Nine games before Milwaukee. Before that Milwaukee game on Saturday, March 25th. All the games before that are with teams that are like 500 or below. The Raptors, the Bulls, the Spurs, the Nets, the Raptors again, Pistons, Knicks, and the Nets, and Washington. Now you look at that and you got nine games there. So make it easier on yourself because you said that Milwaukee stretch, Philadelphia, New Orleans, go 7-2 in these next nine games. Make that the goal, go 7-2. Then you just got to find a way. I mean, again, that's all going to fluctuate, the 12 wins. That's going to fluctuate, like you said. But I'm looking at the record now, and I don't know if that means anything for the Nuggets. But if you go 7-2 here, then you've got obviously tough games. Milwaukee, Philly, New Orleans, Phoenix, Golden State, Houston, Phoenix, Utah, and Sacramento are in there. You want to get most of your work done in these next nine games.
Yeah, I think you want to definitely take advantage of playing the Eastern Conference teams because it's not going to hurt you as much in the standings, but it also allows everybody else in the West to beat each other up. And you know, and then you'll get two really good looks at Phoenix late in the year. We haven't seen them since they made their rebuild or restructuring of that team, so we'll get a good feel for it. But yeah, take advantage because you know Memphis, Golden State, Phoenix, all these teams are going to be playing themselves. And we're going to be playing Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah, I think this is a big week. It's not a big week as far as matchups. It's just a big, you got to take advantage of these matchups. Win these games now. try to lock down this Western Conference spot, that number one spot. How much does the record mean? Would the record mean anything to you? Because the Nuggets have had a bad rap. They've been a very good regular season team under George Karl and Michael Malone, specifically under George Karl. Didn't do much with it in the playoffs. Now, Malone has changed that. You know, since he took over, he's won one, two, three, four. He's won four playoff series, and he's lost one, two, three, four. So 4-4 as far as playoff series go, and how many he's been to and such.
Only one of those seasons was a semi-decent team.
Yeah.
Because 19 was a really good year. 2020 was the bubble. Last 2 years, you haven't been fully healthy. So now you're back to that fully healthy team.
Right.
Best opportunity.
That's a great point, because those first 2 years, you're healthy, you're growing, you're becoming the team that you think you're going to become, and then you know the bubble year happens and you go to the Western Conference Finals. The year after that, no Jamal Murray in the playoff series, and Michael Porter Jr. was still growing. That's why I hate this knock on Malone and, well, they haven't done anything. They were on their way, and then they got derailed by injuries. You know, take Booker or Chris Paul off the Suns right now, and maybe that changed with KD. Things change for you. Take Ja Morant off the Grizzlies. I know he's their star, but still, all those things do change. The Nuggets are a playoff team with Joker. They are a deep playoff team, assuming Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., and Gordon, those guys are healthy. So Gordon was just getting into the swing of things because he wasn't there for they traded for him before the Suns that year, before that year. He was traded for in that year, and he was trying to get some momentum with this team. They looked unbeatable for a moment, and then Jamal goes down. Then they were without Jamal and MPJ last year against the Warriors. So only, you know, the worst year they've had in the playoffs, their two of their top players outside of Joker were not there. So as far as the bad rap of regular season goes, I get it. George Karl's really the main culprit there, because I would say Malone, when he has his weapons, they're pretty good. You know, they split. They won their first round his first year. They lost the second round to the Trailblazers, and that was a game seven. And then they made it to the conference finals. They lost 4-1. Then last year, they did beat the Trailblazers, or 2 years ago, they beat the Trailblazers, lost, of course, Suns in four. And then last year, again, I really hate using last year. That team, Joker,
they were so outmatched against Golden State.
No question about it. Way different things now. So does that mean anything? Do you want them to, you know, if they're five games left and they need to win and they've already locked up the West, do you want them playing for a record if they need like two or three more wins to get to 58?
No.
No.
The record doesn't mean anything. The most important thing for me is having this team healthy and having that number one overall seed, because it might not matter in the small aspect, but it is a huge factor when teams have to travel and adjust their schedules to make sure they can adjust to the altitude.
Yep, I think it's huge. You want that one seed. So that's why, again, tonight, it's got to be a big night. Got to be a big night at home. Knock Toronto down and just get ready for Chicago on Wednesday.
I think Murray has a shot to break the three-point record tonight.
That's right. How many does he need? Because that's behind Barton, isn't it?
Yep.
It's hard to believe.
I think Barton will be in attendance tonight, too. Read that.
Oh, just... Is he on Toronto's now?
I think so.
Okay. I did not know that.
So there you go.
That would be kind of cool. As far as injuries for the Nuggets tonight, you got Chanchar is day-to-day. Bryant is day-to-day. Don't think that means anything.
I've had 2 days off.
Yeah. Zeke Nagy is still out.
What happened to
Who
Zeke?
Who is he? Where did he go?
He's been hurt for like two months.
What happened to Zeke, man? All right, let's look at some of those records coming up next. 38 minutes after the hour. Let's get the latest on the local Sports Flash.
Hey everybody, this is Dalton Reiser with the Denver Broncos, left guard number 66. You're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Always like looking into team history of records and, you know, again, with like the Broncos, maybe the Rockies a little bit. We haven't been able to look at guys that are going to go have chances to break a lot of records, their team records. But you were talking about Jamal Murray and how close he is to breaking the three-point record. for the Nuggets. He's six away. He needs six to tie it.
Six to tie, seven to pass.
Behind Will Barton. Joker is fifth.
Wow.
Like, that's just nuts. He's fifth. He's at 581. And odds are he'll probably pass Michael Adams. I don't know how many threes he takes in. How many threes does the Joker take in a year? He takes, or how many he makes. He's made 45 this year. On a regular year, he's anywhere from 90 to, or 80 to 90 or whatever. So, I mean, there's a chance he could, there's a chance he can move up that list. You know, J.R. Smith is at 768. Yeah, Joker could absolutely do that. He could move up, man. But it's cool to see all these current players, and this is when you know you got a really great team, when they start breaking all the records. And Joker, of course, has most, is already getting most of these. I'm looking at like offensive rebounds. Joker's at 1524. He's fourth behind Byron Beck, Dan Issel, and Alex English. English is at 2038. Joker will pass that at one point. You know, as far as offensive rebounds, he has 131 this year. He had 206 last year. So another, yeah, he'll get that.
49 defensive rebounds to pass Dan Issel.
49, that's all he needs.
Yeah, we'll get that this season.
He'll get that this season. Yep. He'll have that done by next week. Wow.
Second overall in total rebounds.
He needs about 500 or so. Wow. 500 rebounds, or defensive, or total rebounds. And for rebounds, he's doing about, he's at 661 rebounds right now. He did it, obviously, he did the 1,000 last year. He's going past that soon. He'll pass that next year. Unless he goes on some kind of tear. I don't see it this year, but he'll pass that next year. Assists he's got on lockdown. Nobody current is even going to be close. Like, he's at 38-42. He passed Alex English up a while ago. He was at 36-79. Steals, Joker's in the top five. He's at 697. Dan Issel's at 798. Fat Lever holds that record at 1167. Blocks, he's not up there. Wow. How about points? Joker is fifth all time in points for the Nuggets. He is right behind he's right behind David Thompson. He should pass all those guys, man. Alex English is at 21,645. Joker's at 11,736.
Do you want to guess where he ranks on triple doubles?
For the Nuggets? By far and away, number one, right?
Yeah, number two is Fat Lever with 43. Third place is Mutombo with 8.
Here's a trivia for anybody who wants to get in March Madness, if you call. Who is number one in field goal percentage for the Nuggets? See, look at that. But, it makes sense. That's when your shots.
What's more shocking, who's at number one or that Jokic is at four?
Which is crazy because he doesn't dunk. He doesn't dunk. The guy in front of him, the guy at number one, dunks. And that's all he does.
He's higher than the guy in seventh who actually, all he does is dunk.
That's all he does is dunk now. And that's all we want him to do is dunk. I mean, this is just amazing to me, man. You're just starting to see Joker's name decorate these stats more and more. His offensive rating, he's there. Win shares per 48 minutes. That's deep stuff. Value over replacement player. He's got that. True shooting percentage. Well, what's false shooting percentage? Does that take out dunks? True shooting percentage take out dunks? I don't know. What the hell is true shooting percentage? I should probably know that. It's pretty special to see this list, man. And just to see how Joker is becoming the all-time greatest Nugget far and away.
True shooting percentage is a measure of shooting efficiency that takes into account field goals, three-point field goals, and free throws.
Oh, okay.
So okay. Overall,
yeah,
you're shooting.
All right. It's good. That's amazing as a center, isn't it? Like, that's nuts to me. Now, let's go for a triple-double tonight. What is he at now? 102?
I think 101.
101? Let's look it up. Let's see, because we want to break LeBron's record right now. We want to break it this season.
Jokic is 101.
Okay.
LeBron is 106. Jason Kidd, 107.
Let's go.
He's getting 8 easily, right?
I think so. I thought there was no way in hell, but here we are.
With 18 games? Yes.
Yeah. Get one tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll get it tonight. I think he'll play long. I think this might actually be a weirdly close game until early fourth, maybe mid-fourth, and then the Nuggets pull away.
I'm feeling this is like a big points triple-double for Jokic.
Yeah.
He hasn't had like a big points one recently. It's kind of just been, you know, 18, 12, and 10, you know, 20, 16, and 14 or whatever. But I'm going to go 30-plus for Jokic.
Big night tonight for the Joker?
I think so.
Yeah. Hit 18 points the other night. Killed me on a little parlay. Needed 20. Would have hit everything. But such is life.
Just bet on Jamal in the second half.
Yeah.
Second half, Jamal is back.
I think it's going to be a good night. You know, Toronto's fighting for their playoff lives, so every game is desperation mode for them. They want to stay in this thing, so I could see them fighting. But, we'll see what happens tonight. Joker goes off again. Get up to 102.
What are your thoughts? Because I know this has kind of been a narrative around them recently. How well the defense has been playing.
Yeah. I mean, if you're bringing that kind of defense into the playoffs, too, this is what they've always lacked. They've always lacked really good defense. You know, in the past, they had a Carmelo superstar scorer, but the defense wasn't great. And then after that, they were a high-energy team, could get steals and stuff. But as far as one-on-one stopping, they couldn't do it. But Joker, his defensive effort against Memphis was amazing. So, I mean, dude, they are... At the right point in time, they're clicking.
Their defense is steady enough where you don't need to have a frenzy of shooting. But when they do shoot, good chance they're going to make 4 or 5 shots in a row.
Yeah. Everywhere you look at this roster right now, it's just a solid team. It got better at the trade deadline. It got better with picking up some free agents here and there. It got better in the last offseason.
I know the bench hasn't been scoring a lot, but you're not like... freaking out, oh my God, we're going to blow a 15-point lead.
Because they can still play defense.
Yes.
And that's a huge deal. If you can slow them down, even though you're not scoring, if you can just slow things down, then you're going to surprise yourself. 49 minutes after the hour, what did we learn today? Coming up next, it's the whole show live from the Aloe Fiber Studios on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
There's a new ad in town. Hear the blue and gold spring football game on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Clay Millen, quarterback for the Green and Gold, and you're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
The next time you get angry over a bad play, remember you need teamwork to win, not arguments.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Hey, hey, what do you say?
All right, welcome back to the whole show. What did we learn today, Angel? I learned, and maybe I should have known this, but the NBA is like, dude, it's not just not cool to take pictures of you with a gun. If you travel with a gun on any of our facility or in our facilities or our planes, our buses, whatever, big, big, big trouble. And that's what's going on with Ja Morant right now. And Colorado laws is you can own a firearm, but it is illegal to have a firearm with you while you're under the influence of alcohol. Now, can they prove that he was under the influence of alcohol? I don't know. Probably not. But the Grizzlies can prove whether or not he traveled with that gun, and if that gun was, unless he got it here in Colorado. But
that opens up something else. Like, if that was somebody else's gun,
mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so this is a big deal. So that's
crazy.
That's what I kind of learned. I learned that, you know, Broncos got a lot of work to do when it comes to free agency. I also learned that basketball in this area hasn't been great overall for us. But you got a chance to end on a positive note. What did you learn today, Angel?
I learned that the Pac-12 may be looking to get some more teams, try to save themselves from dissolving into the greater college football power that may be coming at some point. But we'll see. I think CSU should make the move. We'll see if they think it'd be good for them.
Well, they got a new stadium.
Well, if you had a choice with sinking ships, do you want the sinking ship with more money?
That's true.
Or, you know, the Titanic.
Go down with more money, at least. Tanner texting this in, I didn't see this yet, but he said the NBA rescinded Giannis's triple-double.
Really?
That shouldn't be right. It happened within the game. They're not going to give him a rebound because technically it was a rebound.
If it's a self-assisted rebound, does it count as a rebound?
He didn't really shoot it, so maybe it's not a shot.
Did it hit the rim?
It looked like it hit the bottom of the rim, but it's clear he wasn't shooting it. Yeah.
Take it away.
Get it out of here. Joker's going off tonight. Nuggets are going off tonight. CSU Rams women's team. McKenna Hoffshield's going off tonight. Roses for everybody. Roses for everybody from the whole show. That'll do it for us. We'll be back at it on a Tuesday. Good night, Northern Colorado.